I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. The war in Kosovo officially ended 10 years ago, but even after a decade, all is not well in that part of the Balkans. Serbs and ethnic Albanians are still arguing over Kosovo's status. The United Nations and European Union are still trying to mediate and keep the peace. And tens of thousands of Kosovo Serbs displaced by the conflict still haven't returned to their former homes. Many of them may never come back, as correspondent Michael Montgomery found out.
Perhaps no scene better illustrates the fate of Serbs still living in parts of Kosovo than the weekly mass at the Monastery of the Holy Archangel. Each Sunday, a small cluster of Serbs gathers at the church, having walked 2 miles up a windy road that rises from the southern Kosovo town of Prizren. At the entrance, the worshippers submit identity cards to German NATO troops who have cocooned the area with razor wire and gun towers to protect the monastery from Albanian extremists. Joining the group on this day is Brankica Antic. She's a 45-year-old Serbian woman who fled Kosovo with her 2 young children just weeks after the war. This is the first time she's been back to her hometown in 10 years.
I came to the Saint Archangels today to pay my tribute to the monastery and to pay my tribute to the people here and to my missing husband, for whom I hope he's still alive, and I lit a candle on that behalf.
Antic's husband Zlatko was abducted in June 1999, weeks after NATO troops and the UN arrived in Kosovo. For 10 years, there's been no information about Zlatko Antic or some 2,000 other Serbs and Albanians who disappeared in Kosovo. Human rights groups say the issue of the missing is a major obstacle in efforts to forge a political settlement between Kosovo's Albanians and Serbs.
I think for the families of both the disappeared and the missing, having to wait more than 10 years to have some access to justice is absolutely reprehensible.
Sean Jones is a senior researcher for Amnesty International. She authored a new report that sharply criticizes the UN and the NATO security force in Kosovo. Its acronym is KFOR. First, they failed to protect some civilians after the war, and then failed to aggressively investigate the killings and abductions, especially crimes linked to members of the Kosovo Liberation Army, or KLA. That's the wartime guerrilla group whose former members dominate Kosovo's current government.
I think the most shocking thing, really, is that the international community was sent in with the responsibility of providing a safe and secure environment in Kosovo. And these acts happened right under their noses.
The United Nations agency that oversees the Kosovo mission, the Department of Peacekeeping Operations, declined requests for an interview. In a written statement, the UN said despite difficulties, it was able to ensure a measure of protection for Kosovo's inhabitants. Still, the search for the missing continues as investigators use mechanical diggers to claw trenches from the Balkan earth. But there's growing evidence that some victims, or their remains, may not be in Kosovo at all. We're heading west now, up into these foothills that eventually lead into the high mountains that are the border between Kosovo and Albania. To get some answers, we set out along Kosovo's western border, where the KLA had bases. We meet former KLA fighters who live here. They still believe in the cause of the war, independence from Serbia, but they agree to provide information because they're disgusted by what some men in the KLA did under the cover of war.
Okay, so we got some more details. We might find this place then.
Near the town of Unik, we look for a group of homes which were used as a KLA base. One source told us about how the KLA held Serb and Roma prisoners here during and after the war. He said he heard the captives screaming, and he felt bad about the abuse. He wanted people to hear his story, but he was fearful about his safety, so we agreed to have an actor read what he told us.
In the beginning, they were held in the house, but I think that when our commanders knew that there are going to be KFOR visits, they just put them in the shack. So even if they wanted, they couldn't see the KFOR, or they wouldn't know that the KFOR were there.
What do you think happened to these people?
Well, I never saw them again, never read on the newspaper anything about them. So probably they just disappeared. You saw the mountains? I mean, it's a huge mountain. Everybody can get lost there. Nobody will look for nobody there.
Those fierce, rugged mountains guard the way into Albania, where the KLA also had bases. We decide to go there to investigate, but along the way we stop off to see a second source who says he was tortured at another KLA base.
I've seen a lot. I've seen people beaten, stabbed, hit with batons. I've seen people left without eating for 5 or 6 days. I've seen people who were put on bulletproof vests and being shot at to see whether the bulletproof vest was working. I've seen people who were thrown in tombs. I've seen people beaten up and killed.
The man tells us the captives at the base were a mix of Serbs, Roma, and like him, Kosovo Albanians, and almost all civilians. He says some of the prisoners were shot or beaten to death at the base, while others were taken away in a yellow Mercedes.
That yellow Mercedes, whenever I saw that, it would take a person in, and those persons that it would take in, I would never see them again.
Okay, here it is. This is the building. It's not a building. It's a derelict factory. I
mean, we locate the former base where the source told us he was tortured. It's over the border in the Albanian town of Kukës. During the war, the KLA had a headquarters here, but what went on inside has been a tightly guarded secret. The UN has gathered testimony that corroborates at least some of the sources' claims of a hidden detention camp here.
The facts that have been able to be demonstrated is that the KLA did have a camp in Kukës.
Jose Pablo Baribar is a Peruvian forensic anthropologist who headed the UN's Missing Persons Office in Kosovo.
There were people that are certainly alive that were in Kukës, in that camp, as prisoners. These people saw other people. They were Albanians as well as they were non-Albanians. They were members of the KLA leadership going through that camp. Many names were mentioned. And I would say that is an established fact.
But not to former KLA leaders. They've denounced the allegations as Serbian propaganda aimed at minimizing Serbia's own wartime atrocities. Agim Čeku was the KLA military commander during the war. He also served as Kosovo's prime minister and is now an opposition MP.
I never heard about this, and personally I don't believe. KLA was a clean army, and we fought a clean war. Yes, incidents happened, but nobody can say exactly who did this and who committed this.
Still, the allegations don't end at the KLA camp in Kukës. Our source, who survived the camp, told us he heard of yet another secret jail near a town in central Albania called Burel. That's hundreds of miles from the Kosovo border. And this is where the story takes a macabre turn. Two other sources we met, both ethnic Albanians who served in the KLA, described their role in driving abducted Serbs from Kosovo through Kukës all the way to Burel. They told us it was strange. This is a transcript of one interview.
When we brought the first group from Kosovo to Burel, I heard that they were checking them, that doctors were checking them and taking blood samples. And they were asking whether they had been beaten or mistreated. This was confusing. Why worry about their health? I later heard something about prisoners or their kidneys going to the airport. I heard they were going to Turkey.
Three separate sources say they were told vital organs were removed from the prisoners and sold for transplant operations abroad. It seemed far-fetched. But 5 years ago, the UN mission in Kosovo mounted an investigation to look into these very allegations, together with officials from the UN War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague. They searched around a house near Burel that was identified by two former KLA operatives through a series of photographs. Forensic anthropologist Jose Pablo Baribar led the search. Within hours, Baribar discovered medicine vials and IV drip bags in a garbage dump near the house. Inside, a forensic spray called luminol, which detects blood traces, was applied to the living room floor. Then another surprise for Baribar's team.
So we found all these glowing areas with the exception of this rectangular area that was not glowing. And obviously, luminol reacts with the blood protein. So the assumption would be that the glowing areas represented blood.
The evidence was far from conclusive, but it was suspicious. So Baribar says the used medical supplies were shipped to the UN War Crimes Tribunal at The Hague for analysis. That was 5 years ago. But according to UN and Serbian sources, the items were never analyzed. Instead, they were destroyed by the tribunal. Jose Pablo Baribar says he believes the tribunal's actions seriously damaged the investigation.
If you destroy evidence in any kind of investigation, you damage the investigation by definition. But even to destroy evidence, that is something you can actually do if you justify why, you have to have a record of why you decided to destroy that evidence.
The UN Tribunal has refused to confirm or deny that it destroyed the material recovered at the house. Meanwhile, two major European inquiries are looking into the allegations of secret detention camps and organ harvesting. Fred Abrahams of Human Rights Watch says they will only be successful if there's political will to go after the perpetrators, something which he says has been sorely lacking in Kosovo.
It's about the broader community in Kosovo and Serbia who say, look, we can get away with murder. The United Nations and the governments in Europe and the U.S. will let you get away with murder. I mean, that is the message that comes away from this.
But international investigators could face another problem, local resistance. In recent days, pro-government newspapers in Kosovo have threatened local journalists who've reported on the allegations. And so far, authorities in Kosovo and in Albania have refused to order their own investigations. For The World, I'm Michael Montgomery.
Michael Montgomery's story was produced with reporting from Jovo Martinovic and Alton Regimi. You can see video footage from Michael's Kosovo reporting at theworld.org.